You are listening to Living for the Cinema with Jeff Gershon. I am a cinema enthusiast of all genres, here to discuss with you one film every episode. The good, the bad, and the ugly of what makes each film unique. Spoiler alert. No matter when this film was released, there's a good possibility I will be revealing spoilers about the plot or even possibly the ending. So just be warned. Valley Girl, which came out in 1983 and was directed by Martha Coolidge. It stars Nicolas Cage, Deborah Foreman, Elizabeth Daly, Michael Bowen, Cameron Dye, Heidi Holliker, Michelle Myrink, Tina Theberge, Frederick Forrest, and Colleen Camp. The genre would be teen romantic comedy.
So when can I see you again?
I'm here with you now.
I know.
This is the story of Randy and Julie, the way they come together, and the people who try to pull them apart.
Like, don't you think they have parties over there?
Oh, where? At the zoo?
This geek that she's with could scar her for life.
God, life?
If you think she's confused, you should see her father.
I'm together now. Be right there.
Julie's cool. Randy's hot. She's from the valley. He's not. Valley Girl.
Now, admittedly, I was late to the party on this one, as I did not actually first see this movie until a couple years ago. But I just found it super charming. I was kind of shocked that I never saw it before. And as it is now approaching its 40th anniversary, has it lost any of that charm rewatching it a second time? I'm so sure.
I'm so sure.
Yeah, it sounds better when she says it. What always had me intrigued about this movie, despite its cult status, is that Martha Coolidge directed this, and her next film would be Real Genius, which remains one of my favorite films of the decade. Also, Deborah Foreman had a small but memorable role in that film as the defense contractor's daughter who Professor Hathaway is having an affair with.
No, seriously, listen, if there's ever anything I can do for you, or more to the point, to you, you let me know, okay?
Can you hammer a 6-inch spike through a board with your penis?
Not right now.
A girl's gotta have her standards.
But she stars in this film as the titular Valley Girl, and she is really quite winning and engaging, and I'm kind of shocked that she did not get more roles like this afterwards. I would gather that Foreman ended up getting market corrected by the likes of Molly Ringwald or Demi Moore at that time.
You don't mean that guy.
What's the conversation, girls?
He's that guy from Hollywood. I mean, like, he came back for Stacey and me and took us back over the hill. I mean, we had to have a super time. I mean, like, your party was super and all. Man, he's just like triffendicular, you know?
And yes, she stars alongside a 19-year-old Nicolas Cage in his first real role as Nicolas Cage. Yeah, before this, he actually went by Nicolas Coppola in his two smaller roles before this, including previous episode Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And he's the real star here. As to be expected, Cage's aspiring punk Randy is goofy, quirky, and just adorable.
Well, you know, it slipped my mind. I really didn't think it was that important, but I will tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to reach in my pocket, I'm going to get a dime, I'm going to go down to the phone booth, I'm going to make a phone call, come right back up and talk.
There's a cute scene early on when he snuck into the bathroom of a house party to see Julie, and he's just hiding out in the shower, anxiously waiting for a chance for the bathroom to be empty so that he could just slip out. And he's just waiting, and waiting, and waiting. And we watch him making a variety of faces, almost trying to will the current occupants out. And in most 80s teen movies of this type, this sort of scene would be played for creepy voyeurism. But not here. Here he's just an excitable, gawky teenager waiting impatiently to find this girl at the party. Cage just makes it more sweet and endearing.
Don't be afraid.
What are you doing here? Do you have a death wish or something?
That's what Fred said.
Fred said?
Never mind. You live around here?
Like, this is very strange. What are you doing back here?
I forgot my comb.
And he and Foreman are great together. They have good chemistry. Though I do wish that more of their interactions weren't montaged, as much as I enjoy those montages. Though with such a catchy new wave soundtrack at her disposal, I can hardly blame director Coolidge for going that route. All around, Valley Girl just remains a fun, sweet movie that is very much of its time. With some dated trappings, but it'll just put a goofy smile on your face if you allow it.
Well, like, I like Randy a lot, you know? Like, he's different.
What, he was in an accident or something? Things don't work the way they should?
No.
I saw a movie like that once.
Did you?
All right, how is he different?
I don't know. He for sure doesn't dress like my friends or even talk like them.
Mm-hmm, I see. Well, is that wrong?
My friends think so.
Mm-hmm. That's important.
Well, sure, I guess. I don't want to lose them.
Of course not.
And they all want me to be with Tommy.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you want?
I
want
to be with Randy. It's getting hard. I don't want any problems.
Yeah, well, there's the rub, you see? Nothing's easy. I want to show you something. You see, honey, sometimes the way things look aren't the way they really are, or the way they're going to turn out.
And now the categories. The first category would be the best needle drop. This is the best song cue or piece of score used throughout the runtime of the film, because music is essential to film, and very much this film. And speaking of that catchy soundtrack, it is honestly one of the best collections of 80s new wave that you're ever likely to hear. The soundscape of this movie is wall-to-wall with several luminaries of the time, including the Psychedelic Furs, Josie Cotton, the Human League, and one of my personal favorites from this era, and in a key scene, Men at Work. It's hard to narrow it down to one, but if I had to, for the best needle drop, sorry, but I just kind of have to go the obvious route here, with the English. The modern English. That's right, the totally tubular post-punk band from Essex, England, fronted by Robbie Gray, which started in 1979 before breaking up and reforming several times over well into the 90s, with Gray as the only member who would stay on for every incarnation. And what we hear is an iconic song from their album After the Show, which was released the year before this movie came out. The song that this movie is most associated with, as it became a charting hit only after the surprise box office success of this movie when it hit theaters in 1983. We actually hear the song twice in its entirety. First, right around the midpoint of the movie, as we break into a disarmingly sweet romance montage, as we see Randy and Julie frolicking about on several dates, laughing, kissing, sharing pie, calling each other on the phone. It's radical. But even better, I love how the song closes out the movie with the opening chords kicking in over an image of our fair couple sitting in the back of a limousine, each with bemused looks on their faces, not knowing what to say. It's clearly an homage to the ending of The Graduate, but admittedly a more hopeful version. And the movie ends with Kay just kind of busting out a goofy, toothy smile as the camera then pulls out to follow their limo out on the highway, passing the Sherman Oaks Galleria. A very fitting tribute to the Valley, if you ask me. And in case you still don't know what song I'm talking about, well, of course, it's the power pop anthem, I Melt With You. Just the right kind of rousing song to end this movie on a delightful note.
Moving forward, using all my breath. Making love to you was never second best. I saw the world crashing all around your face. Never really knowing it was always mesh and lace. I'll stop the world and melt with you. You've seen the difference and it's getting better all the time. There's nothing you and I won't do. I'll stop the world and melt with you.
The next category would be wasted talent. This is the most underutilized talent involved with the film, and I'm going to still keep it about the music. I would like to give a special shout out to an enduring, idiosyncratic pop and rock duo who actually contribute two bitchin' songs to this film's soundtrack. And I'm talking about Los Angeles' own Sparks. Two brothers, Ron and Russell Meal. They have been crafting uniquely Southern California-flavored music since 1966 and are still going strong, no joke. To refer to their sound as quirky is kind of an understatement, but their vibe fits this movie perfectly. Their musical highlight for this movie has to be the bizarrely catchy Monster of Love, which we hear over one of the more risque sequences in the movie as we watch the strapping young groceries delivery boy Skip venture into the home of the Brents, where he's been invited to have a rendezvous. But is it with his classmate Susie or her stepmother, who made a pass at him during his last delivery? Okay, yeah, if you've not seen this, that might sound a bit sketchy, but the scene generally works for some reason. Oh yeah, it's because of this goofy song. It's just one of those songs that when you first hear it, you're thinking, who wrote this? It sounds like a bad jingle for a children's show. As if. But somehow it just grabs you. You're humming it, and you're singing the chorus for the rest of the day in spite of yourself. And the reason they're cited for this category, the Sparks, well, mainly because when it comes to remembering the legacy of this movie, or the time period, Sparks are just not mentioned nearly as frequently as, say, a Men at Work or a Human League. And yet their legacy lives on to this very day. Just check out their latest video on YouTube for their latest song, The Girl Is Crying in Her Latte, featuring Lydia Tarr herself, Kate Blanchett, yep, doing her best impersonation of David Byrne in a bright yellow suit, dancing up a storm in the middle of the frame. Apparently, rumor has it that she's actually still playing her troubled lead character from the movie Tar. Yep, if there was one band capable of providing a unique link between the movies Tar and Valley Girl, it's Sparks. Enough said.
Is it due to the rain? Or is she in some pain? She looks physically fine. Guess it's something benign. The girl is crying in her latte, yeah. The girl is crying in her latte, sad. The girl is crying in her latte, wow. The girl is crying in her latte, bad.
The next category would be the trailer moment. This is the scene or moment that best describes this movie. Now, there can only be one, and it has to be the prom climax. Now, you think it's just about Randy wooing back Julie from Tommy, portrayed to sneering Billy Zabka-like perfection by Michael Bowen, as we do get to see Tommy's dazzling kung fu display all clad in white, only to watch him get quickly dispatched with a kick to the groin by Randy, and that would be enough. But nope. You also get to hear a brief but passionate monologue by the teacher who is emceeing the prom, played by Joanne Barron, expressing what she feels is so important about being crowned prom king and queen. And that's not all. Nope. We also get to see our lovely couple kickstart a massive food fight when Randy throws a pie into Tommy's face during their dashing exit. And as if that wasn't enough, we also get a memorable moment seeing Randy's best friend, Fred, with the red-dyed hair, finally also physically standing up to Tommy. He's played by Cameron Dye. Coincidence? And you say you want even more? Okay, well, we even get the bonus of seeing 80s power pop diva Josie Cotton performing on stage. Wow. Just how much low-budget insanity can you positively pack into less than 10 minutes of screen time?
I'm going to give you the chance you never gave me.
One can't help it. When one is honorable. When one is disciplined. When one is school spirit. Yes. Kings and queens, they don't grow on trees.
All of them.
Everyone can't be a king and a queen.
Schoolboy.
No, students.
Get up.
I remember my prom. I wanted to be the queen. I wasn't.
What are you doing, huh? What's it? Stop!
Who have set an example for our whole school with their behavior. They need no introduction, because they are not just the king and queen of Valley High. They are Valley High. Your king, your queen.
This climax just kills. And now the final category. That would be the MVP, the person or people who are most responsible for the success of this film. The more I've learned about the actual production history of this movie, the more I'm amazed. This film was given a $350,000 budget from the get-go, and the script from co-writers Andrew Lane and Wayne Crawford, it was pretty lean. And this being only her second feature-length movie, its relatively novice director really had to think on her feet throughout, including relying on improvisation to flesh out several scenes on a limited 20-day shoot. Not easy to do. This also included exhaustive efforts to keep the production costs low, to the point where some members of the crew had to rely on teenage relatives to volunteer on such non-union tasks as preparing costumes for the cast. And apparently much of this movie was shot on the fly, at houses and or clubs where someone from the main crew had a relationship with the owner, so they could film there for free. And as you would expect, all of the extras were unpaid, including for that climactic prom scene, which included two rival college fraternities making trouble against each other. Yikes. But here's the kicker. Coolidge, in the absence of a firm script, along with many other resources, did one thing to keep everything on track. She storyboarded everything, mapped out every shot and scene. Now, sure, not everything looks crisp, not all of the performances are spot on, and there are some awkward edits, But this movie moves nicely while maintaining a touching tone throughout. It's kind of a valley version of Romeo and Juliet, albeit with a happy ending this time. And what also helps it work is that the location work is fantastic. It's kind of amazing how many different places we're going to. We're cruising along Hollywood Boulevard at points, hanging out in the hills. Apparently, Coolidge herself was very much into the Hollywood club scene at the time. And it shows. Everywhere we go feels authentic. For pulling off a sweet love story with the backdrop of a fun time capsule of Hollywood and the Valley in the early 80s, Martha Coolidge is the MVP.
You know it when it's right. You know, and that fate, if something falls through, it doesn't go right, then it's for a reason. And I don't know if I believe in fate or I don't believe in its destiny. It's not
I do.
I mean, I do in a way, but I don't know that I would say I throw all my cards on it. But yeah, Valley Girl was meant to be my first movie.
Well, I'm glad it worked out the way it
yes,
did.
Yes, yes.
My rating for Valley Girl would be 4 stars out of 5. Oh yeah, and in case you didn't notice, this film is eminently quotable.
Hi, I'm Fred. I like tacos and 71 Cabernet. My favorite color is magenta.
Along with Fast Times, this film's vernacular helped lay the groundwork for many popular entertainments of the 90s, including Wayne's World, Beverly Hills 90210, and of course, Clueless.
Is this in 3D?
No, but your face is.
Happy 40th anniversary to a true gem. And if you're looking to watch Valley Girl, it is currently streaming on Tubi, Canopy, and Pluto TV. And that ends another tripendicular review. Special shout out to my lovely wife, Marlene Gershon, for producing this podcast, and to my lovely daughter, Ella Gershon, for assisting in the editing. Please like, subscribe, and share the Living for the Cinema podcast, and follow and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And join us next time for another review from Living for the Cinema.
Getting better.